Good evening, Truth Seekers. It's about 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy Show. You ready for the weekend? Oh, God. Hey, I've got, I just got a big old question here. We may have asked a variation of this question not too long after this gusher was unleashed, and all the governors of the states down there started turning to the federal government for help. But I this is addressed to the teabagger freaks. Where are you? The government is stepping all over sovereign rights down there. Obama today said he's in control. Obama has been pimped so bad by the oil companies that he actually stood and said, I'm responsible. It's my, what did he say? Where is it? He reiterated what he said at a White House news conference, yesterday. And what he said today, I ultimately take responsibility for solving this crisis. I'm the president. The buck stops with me. You got to wonder how did the oil industry get the president of the United States? How did they override the elected head of a nation and make him take on the guilt or the responsibility or whatever the hell it is? But they succeeded. So Obama, anyway, we'll get to that a little bit later. So the teabaggers, I mean, why aren't you all out there in droves telling the feds to get the hell out of the state's business? Come on. Why aren't you down there at Bayou La Batre or someplace on the Louisiana coast screaming your guts out about, where's Rand Paul? I mean, come on. He's a libertarian. He doesn't believe the government should pass civil rights laws. Should the government be butting in to clean up this horrible mess? The mess was caused by private industry, Rand. Hey, you teabag freaks. You teabag jerkwads. This was a private corporation. So shouldn't the government stay out? Huh? Shouldn't they just back off? Let's just talk about all these National Guard troops down there. Illinois National Guard was a couple of units in the National Guard activated today to send to Louisiana. Come on, baggers! You phony little rat bastards, where are you? Oh, plus, some of the area that's being hit are Louisiana State Reserves. You know, breeding grounds and parks. Come on, folks. Where are you, teabag halfwits? I thought you didn't want any government involvement. Why? Where's Sarah Palin? Why isn't that chump, that half governor, why isn't she down there giving speeches in front of all the teabaggers saying, no, we don't want government involvement. Drill, baby, drill. Yeah, the teabaggers are where they always are, the cowardly rats. They're hiding back in their holes. You people make me so sick. And you're not fooling America. You know, some of you may get elected this election cycle because people are fed up with the inactivity, the inability of the legislative branch to work. But the reason the legislative branch doesn't work is because of these filthy Republicans. Duh. Oh, God. That's what they tried to do during the Clinton years. And Clinton just flipped them. Used a little political jujitsu and got done what he wanted done. Obama, I said last night, Obama, I have a feeling he's kind of naive. And that's what I meant. I got a couple of people email me and said, naive? Come on, are you kidding me? This guy knows exactly, you misunderstood me. When I say I think Obama's naive, he's naive about how power works. He doesn't know how to operate like a Reagan, like a Clinton, like a Dick Cheney, like Lyndon Johnson. He's politically naive. He really is. I'm not criticizing the president of the United States on his intellect or his ability to give good speeches or what have you. Remember, there's not a president on the horizon of this country who will ever have independence, ever. So Obama's naivete coupled with the fact that he is willing, the classic example, he takes on responsibility for the oil spill. Not for the actual explosion, no, but for what happened since the explosion. Like that's his burden. Or the burden of us, the taxpayers, right? Because this pollution and corruption of the Louisiana coast, Alabama coast, Florida coast, Texas coast, this is going to be there, wreaking destruction long after Barack Obama has left office, become a grandfather, and drawing Social Security. So when he says he takes responsibility, that is what he feels, apparently, he needs to say in order to satisfy corporate America. Or, vice versa, this is what corporate America wants him to say as the payoff for their allowing him to become president. Oh, is that too tinfoil hatty for you? Huh? Maybe so. Obama was not told, though, when he had the press briefing. When was that, yesterday or today? There have been two. He had one yesterday. Right. When he gave the one yesterday, nobody had bothered. At when was it? 4:30 in the afternoon. Nobody had bothered to tell him that BP had stopped the attempt to blow mud into this horror. Nobody had told him. Now, if that's the president, the government of the United States being in charge, then we're all in worse shape than any of us, any of the negative ideas about how far we've drifted into corporatism would suggest. They didn't even bother to tell him, Mr. President, guess what? We stopped blowing all this crap down the hole because we're afraid we're going to rupture the pipe. If we rupture the pipe, the whole floor of the ocean may buckle, or it'll appear that way. So they didn't even tell him. His advisors, whether they knew or didn't know, is at this point kind of beside the point. But his advisors let him go out for a press briefing when he didn't even know. Well, neither did the press people questioning him, or they would have unloaded. You bet your ass on that one. But there's Barack Obama, the president of the United States, going out to give his assessment and then take questions, not knowing. This guy's a lawyer. Didn't he have a law degree? Doesn't he have one of the best in the world? Doesn't he understand that a good attorney in a courtroom will never ask a question to which he doesn't already have the answer? So there's Barack Obama in the witness chair, more or less. And his advisors didn't bother to tell him. It's astonishing. But anyway, if any of you filthy, cowardly, stinking teabaggers with your half-witted signs have any kind of courage at all, you little crybabies, why don't you go down to the Louisiana coast? Huh? Why don't you go down there to help clean up? No, you never do that. It's your corporations that did it. Why don't you go down there along with the assistance of your filthy Republican administration over the last 8 years? Come on, you loudmouth brats. Why don't you go down there? Nah, you're not going to do that. Okay, why don't you go down and help? Why don't you go down with your signs then? Why don't you go down with the sign of Hitler, of Obama looking like Hitler? Go down with your signs, keep the federal government sucks. Keep the federal government out of my life. Why don't you? I'll tell you why. Because you're lying, slimy, cowardly teabaggers. That's why. You crybaby little punks. We'll be back. You teabaggers make me want to throw up bile. Population keeps on bleeding. Nation bleeding. Still bleeding. Life is funny. Skies are sunny. Bees made honey. Bees made honey. No, 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 no.
Gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
The hour. So the President of the United States, pimped by the oil companies to such a degree that he had to go down and say he was ultimately responsible. I've been saying this week that if we capture and arrest people in Afghanistan or Pakistan or wherever we have operations, known or unknown, if we arrest people based on somebody else saying, oh, this guy works for Al-Qaeda, and we detain them for years, with no charges, no explanation, no bond, no hearing, no rights, no nothing. If we're willing to do that based on an assumption that the person selling this enemy combatant that is then described as such by somebody like Dick Cheney, if we're willing to do that, why are we not willing to gather up the entire board of directors and the executives at BP and jail them? So far, they have caused 11 people to die. And one can assume that it was a very painful, fiery death, burning and drowning at the same time. Son of a bitch. Can it get any worse than that? But there they all are. All the executives, that Tony freak, if I have to see him one more time, I'm going to smash my television. I swear I am. Here we are, all the executives, walking up and down these bloodied beaches off the coast of Louisiana, talking about, well, we'll certainly make sure that this is cleaned up. No, you won't. It can't be cleaned up. And Barack Obama, I mean, did you not take, Mr. President, any science courses? Any courses on fluid dynamics or the properties of oil or anything like that? Was your entire education about how to talk cool? How to talk like a lawyer? You're not alone, you said, and you will not be abandoned. We are on your side. We will see this through. Through to what? I mean, one tries, doesn't one, to show patience when we are not dealing with a village idiot like George W. Bush. Barack Obama is not a village idiot, but is he naive? Is he, you know, people emailed me after the show last night. Come on, Malloy, get in the game. He's part of the problem, not the solution. Okay, what do you mean, get in the game? I understand he's a corporatist. He's not the brutal kind like Dick Cheney. Oh, Cheney's not a corporatist. Cheney's a goddamn killer. Cheney's a Nazi. Cheney's a cyborg. Cheney's a monster. But there's Barack Obama. He said the outcome of the top kill procedure was still unclear. He cautioned people to contain their frustrations with every failed action. And what are the people supposed to do? What about those of us who are not seeing our livelihoods go up, Mr. President? What are we supposed to do? Contain our frustrations, knowing that what is occurring down there is the worst environmental disaster in the history of this country. Not according to me, not according to NBC, but according to scientists, environmentalists, the worst environmental disaster in history for this country. Other countries deal with this all the time. Which oil company was it that went into Peru? Was it Peru? And left the country a sopping, oily mess. What have I read? This is an exaggeration, but I read, you know, go anywhere in Peru, unless it's up in the mountains. Go anywhere and dig a hole in the ground and see how fast it fills up with slime. Thanks. It was Texaco. Was it Texaco? I think it was Texaco. So, but those people don't count. Those are people in South America. They're brown skin. They don't have the kind of material stuff we have. You know, some of those people still live in the trees, don't they? They don't count. But here in the United States of America, by God, we count! So, Mr. President, he said America's never experienced an event like this before, and that means as we respond to it, not every judgment we make will be right the first time out. Well, Mr. President, I need to ask somebody in your administration or the one before you, or the one before that, or the one before that, or the one before that, why are these predatory capitalist bastards being allowed to provide the circumstances where this kind of chaos can develop if we've never experienced an event like this before? We don't know what we're doing. There are going to be judgment calls. You're dealing with life on the planet. The corporations couldn't care less, don't you, Mr. President? I guess not. My bad. I fooled myself into believing you gave a damn. We'll be right back.
It's More Mike Malone.
Welcome back. It is 25 before the hour. We'll have the video cam back up in a second. So anyway, as Andre wrote in today, so there's Obama shouldering all the blame for the BP ecocide. This is a page right out of the International Monetary Fund playbook. Only, you know, we're not some crappy little third world country, are we? We are the United by God States of America, the greatest nation on earth, where, like in any other country, the corporations trump the sovereignty of the country. Of course. Of course. And, you know, in countries where the corporations only have to do with deal with the dictators, it's very easy. You just pay them a lot of money, pay their families a lot of money, and then go in and rip and rape and steal whatever you want from the people in the country where you're raping and pillaging and stealing. It's just like privateers back in the days of the Bounding Main. And, oh, I'm a sailor man. Yes, I am. 16 men on a dead man's chest. Yo-ho-ho and a bottle of rum. That's what's going on. That's what they did now to Obama. So when I said the other night, is he naive? When somebody suggested to him, either for political reasons or because the corporations, the capitalistic monsters demanded of, whatever the reason, what would possess Barack Obama to say, like, what's his name? Who's the guy when Reagan got shot who said, I'm in charge here? Alexander Haig. Remember that? Alexander Haig, who was as much in charge of the U.S. government at the time as I was. I'm in charge here. No, you're not. Sit down. Shut up, you little Nazi. But here's Obama channeling Alexander Haig. Naive? Oh, and Piyush Jindal. I agree with Andre here. Andre says, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, will you? Roll up your sleeves and start cleaning up. Stop whining. What are you whining about, Piyush? Come on. You don't want the federal government down there. Where's your teabagger friends? Come on, get some of those monkeys that attended all these rallies. Why don't you get Glenn Beck? Why don't you get Rush Limbaugh, Sarah Palin, Michelle Crazy Eyes Malkin? Why don't all you people go down there and help out? Come on. Huh? You phony bastards. Every one of you. But Paiush, my goodness, I mean, shouldn't you prevailing upon the teabaggers to come down and help you? Right? Because everybody knows big government, oh, it's poison. It's poison. Except when it's not. Right, Paiush? Except when the bigger poison, the bigger monster, happens to be capitalism, corporate America. Right? Huh? Everybody's a capitalist, right, Paiush? Until this happens. Then everybody's a socialist, right, Paiush? Until somehow you get it to stop. Everybody's a capitalist again, right, Paiush? And not just Paiush, every one of you turkeys, every one of you whining, crybaby, libertarian, racist, jerkwads. Oh, my God. Not, I wouldn't give 25 cents for 1,000 of you. You just make me sick. Least you can do is get down there and help. It's your corporation, huh? Right? You don't want to help? No? Okay, yeah, that's too socialist, right? That's right. And watching Obama today give the presser. Is that the term? Presser? Does that make me sound like a journalist? A presser. When he was speaking today, telling the people of South Louisiana, you're not alone. That's a nice, compassionate thing to say. But, Mr. Obama, that's bull hockey. Of course they're alone. What do you mean they're not alone? Who's down there with them? Oh, that's right. There's some cleanup going on. Yeah. People who had honorable jobs are now being hired by BP to put on the little suits. Oh, no respirators. As long as the little white suits are on, everybody looks like nice little. It's like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. I mean, it's just bizarre. The little worker people. Don't wear a respirator, though. That may save your life. But until it saves your life, it's going to make us look horribly responsible. So don't do that. Honorable jobs, shrimpers, fishermen, crabbers, all kinds of people. What are they doing now? Collecting little balls of tar. That's what they're doing. They're walking up and down the beach collecting little balls of tar. They're floating out into the ocean trying to put out booms that are totally ineffective. Well, not totally ineffective. They're probably stopping 3% of the oil that is slowly destroying the Mississippi Gulf region. Alabama, Louisiana, Texas, Florida Panhandle. So there they are. You know, every time we used to go to St. George's Island or Cape San Blas down in the armpit, the Florida Panhandle out there. Not in the armpit, the Florida Panhandle. And we go to East Point. Apalachicola, for sure. But the shrimpers, so many shrimpers, are based out of East Point, Georgia. And if you've ever driven across Apalachicola Bay or boated across or sailed across or which we have done, and you see the oystermen, you don't know what work is. I don't know what work is until you've worked on an oyster boat. With those great big, what are those tongs? 15 feet long tongs, 20 feet, huge tongs that they jam into the bottom and pull them together, or actually pull them apart, which closes the mouth of these oyster grabbers. And then they bring them up, and they're full of mud and shells and oysters. And they do that all day long. When you do that kind of work, what you're involved in is more of a culture than a way of work. A way of life than just, it's not an occupation. It's a way of life. And this filthy company that overthrew the government of Iran in 1954 that has destroyed everything has ever touched. Everything. Every single thing. Every place BP has gone. People die. The environment is destroyed. And it's not just BP. Come on. Any oil company. Every oil company is indictable for crimes against humanity. But there's Barack Obama down there saying, we're not going to leave you. What are you going to do, Mr. President? Are you and the members of Congress, not the Republicans, Republicans will sit there with their thumbs in their anuses, but you and the Democratic members of Congress, you all going to go down there and help out? What are you going to do? Are you going to go into the marshes, into the estuaries, Mr. President, and do what? Take Q-tips in there and try to clean it all out? It's not coming out. You should have paid attention in your science classes, Mr. President. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be a smart ass, but when you go down there and say, we're not going to forget you, we'll take care of you until this is all cleaned up, you're talking about 100 years. Oh, well. Obama, you know what I watched him today. I watched him talk. Listen to what he had to say. I watched his body language and his facial expression. That never changes, does it? I don't care what he's talking about. It's always the same. Always the same. And I kept thinking about those lines. There is no pain. You are receding. A distant ship. Smoke out on the horizon. You're only coming through in waves, Mr. President. Your lips move, but I can't hear what you're saying. It's the same stuff. When I was a child, I caught a fleeting glimpse out of the corner of my eye. I turned to look, but it was gone. I can't put my finger on it now, Mr. President, but the dream has grown. The child has grown. The dream is gone. Me? I've become comfortably numb. There is no pain. You are receding, Mr. President. I had kind of hoped that wouldn't happen. But that's what I saw today. Hey, look, I can only watch and report. Professor Thomas, American history, I guess, sent me an email. I'll share it with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Before
the hour, Tom in California writes, "Tom, my good little workers cleaning up after BP's party. These killers know what they're doing, BP. The more fishermen they can kill from toxic cleanup, the less they have to pay in reparations." Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it? From Professor Thomas and his last name, American history professor. So how many politicians in the Gulf states, one, favor the deregulatory state? Well, I thought all of them did. They're all the Gulf states are run by Republicans. And the head of the Republican Party is Rush Limbaugh, and his assistant is Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin, of course. And Rand Paul sucks in there someplace, but yeah. So how many politicians in the Gulf states favor the deregulatory state? How many support unrestricted offshore oil drilling? Well, Charlie Crist didn't. I don't think the government of Florida did, but the other ones couldn't care less. But, you know, Florida, billions in tourist dollars, bye-bye. How many politicians in the Gulf states took significant campaign contributions from pig oil as opposed to big oil? Do we include Obama in that? I think we have to. How many politicians in the Gulf states supported the energy policies of the Cheney-Rove junta after the energy cabal met early in 2001? Probably all of them. How many support the ideology of drill baby drill? Well, all except Charlie Crist, I think. Spill, baby, spill. Drown in it now. You got what you voted for. Yeah. Yeah, I'm having a hard time. I really am not trying to be a cynic or a smartass here, but I'm having a real hard time understanding why. Of course, there have been a lot of silence from Haley Barbour, at least that I'm aware of, the governor of Mississippi, former head of the Republican Party. And a guy that didn't get caught taking money from the Chinese, but he did. Sue me on that one, Haley, if you think that's not true. I'm waiting. Haley Barbour hasn't said anything because it would be counter to his I don't give a rat's ass attitude about people in his state. He doesn't care. Alabama, who's the guy? I don't even know who the governor of Alabama is. Has he said anything? Haven't heard anything. Rick Goodhair Perry over in Texas. I don't know. Not until something comes boiling into Galveston Bay. He'll probably just sit there with his mouth sewn shut, too. But poor Piyush Jindal, huh? Oh, my God. Up-and-coming Republican. Forced, I tell you, to prostrate himself. Well, prostate too, I guess. Prostrate himself in front of the cameras, talking about how he just absolutely needs more of this and more of that and more of this and more of that from the federal government. And the point is, of course he does. It's not the fact that the federal government's involvement is needed. It is needed. It's about the cocky attitude of these Republicans, these scum, swine-swilling bastards who talk about secession and keep the government off my Medicare and crap like that until this happens, right? Then all of a sudden, where's mommy? Where's daddy? I can't do this on my own. Where's my bootstraps? Oh, my God, they're gone. Really? Really? Bunch of phonies. From Bruce, Obama's promise to help the people in the Gulf states is put in perspective by the Congress. Extended unemployment runs out Monday. The House passed it today by only one vote, and then only by loading the bill up with more tax breaks for the wealthy. The Senate will not take it up until after the holiday. You are talking about millions of people who have been put out of work for 2 years and have fewer prospects right now than a crawdad swimming in gumbo. Yeah. Yeah. This is what I meant by naive. Obama being naive. Before you flood me with emails, for God's sake, just stop for a second. Oh, Mike said he's naive. He's not naive. He's naive about this. He doesn't understand how power works. Maybe it doesn't work that way anymore. Worked for LBJ. Of course, LBJ misused it. Worked for Reagan. Reagan misused it. Well, Reagan used it the exact way that corporate America told him to do it. But the power is there. Maybe you just can't switch it on anymore. Is that it, Mr. President Obama? Can't do it anymore? The switch is still there, but some rat bastard went in the basement and threw the circuit breaker, right? So, you keep trying to flip on the switch of power, and nothing happens. Not unless you're a big-ass, too-big-to-fail, too-big-to-jail corporation. You know how they turn on the power? That simple. So, Mr. President, when you talk about if things aren't working out down here the way you want it, call the Admiral. If he can't handle it, call me. You got to be kidding. Naive. Oh, well. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
This is an important...
The hour. This is the Molloy Show. Swamp Rat, who is this extraordinary artist, illustrator, one of the best in the country as far as I'm concerned, used to write to us a lot, but he's been otherwise kind of busy, I guess. I just got this email from Mike. I drove to Venice, Louisiana yesterday with a colleague. We saw very little action there. Boats moored, helicopters grounded, very few people working. Except those coming and going from the Conoco plant, BP, and Halliburton buildings. We could not get to the marina on Coast Guard Road as it was blocked. So we went around and looked through the marsh grass and saw very little action. Okay, that was yesterday and this is today. I appreciate the president coming here and finally speaking to us on our native soil, but we are very, very skeptical. Fool me once, etc., etc. Peace from New Orleans. Swamp Rat, who is from New Orleans. Well, not from. I mean, he lives there. I'm going to make a challenge to Glenn Beck. I would like to meet Glenn Beck someplace and square off in a man-to-man fight. And the reason I'm doing this is because I feel compelled, being a father of a little girl, to defend the president's daughters. Beck continues to smear Barack Obama's 11-year-old daughter. All right. Tell you what, Glenn, I'm sure word of my little challenge here will get to you. I'm calling your bony ass out, you filthy coward. President Obama yesterday remarked during his press conference that Malia, his 11-year-old, asked him of the Gulf oil spill, "Did you plug the hole yet, Daddy?" Beck, taking off on this, mockingly affected Malia's voice, asking, "Daddy, why he hates black people so much?" Then Beck attacked Malia's intelligence, saying, that's the level of their education that they're coming to. They come to Daddy and saying, Daddy, did you plug the hole yet? This routine went on for several minutes. Beck and his co-host touched on a variety of topics and laughed the entire time, all at the expense of an 11-year-old. You cowardly son of a bitch, I'm not an 11-year-old. I'm an adult male. And I'm calling your filthy, disgusting ass out. You're going to say that about an 11-year-old child? My name is Mike Malloy, and I do talk radio. You know how to find me, you pig. You filthy pig. Now, there were a whole bunch of posts at, where are these posts coming from? Facebook. After this cowardly son of a bitch, Glenn Beck, and his gang attacked an 11-year-old girl today, Facebook comments, some of these are just incredible. Daddy, why are you blanking your own blank? Daddy, Uncle Osama's on the phone. He wants to talk to you. Daddy, why won't you let Air Force One fly over Arizona? Daddy, you haven't ruled the country as conservatives claim. You've just spent trillions and trillions that no one has. Daddy, were you there back in Hawaii smoking weed with Willie when he cut off his tails? Daddy, if you don't want me to be punished with a baby, no grandkids for you. Daddy. It goes on and on. You filthy, filthy, filthy scum. So there you go. Piss boy. Word will get to you through some of these right-wing psycho murder sites. You attack an 11-year-old child on your radio program, and you go on for the better part of half an hour. You filthy piece of human waste. Well, I'm probably old enough to be your father, but I'll tell you what, I'm calling you out. I'm calling you out. What are you going to do, Beck? What are you going to do? You know how to get in touch with me. You know what network distributes my program. Piece of human waste, you scum-sucking little punk. Sean in Allen, Texas writes, Mike, check it out. The BP video stream just went down a little while ago. I guess they forgot to rewind the tape. I'm dead serious about the Beck thing. Regarding Haley Barbour, Kate writes, oh, no, he was on the TV this morning in Mississippi saying that the oil wasn't toxic. There's nothing to worry about. My friend wrote me today. She was aghast. Irish Dave, regarding whether or not somebody, well, apparently not, nobody informed President Obama that BP had stopped the mud insertion. Irish Dave, I got to change a little bit of this. Mike, as you know, these things are handled on a need-to-know basis, and nowhere is it written that the president has any need to know. Did you realize Naive spelled backwards is Evian, a French bottled water? Mere coincidence? Irish Dave, P.S., it's mostly Ecuador. What did I say? Did I say Bolivia? Ecuador, where Texaco and Chevron, I said Peru, Texaco and Chevron involved themselves in gang rape against that country. Slimy bastard, Glenn Beck. What a slimy, slimy bastard. Huh?
And what talk show host was it? It was some conservative. Was it Beck? I'm trying to rack my brain now. I want to say it was even early this week that talked about how no one on the right would ever go after a child or you know, talk. I'm trying to. Oh, was. Who was it? Now it's going to drive me crazy.
What?
Well, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay.
What?
Well, I'm asking. It's still your show. I'm just musing on the air live to millions of people. There was some, I want to say it was a conservative talk show host early this week who was making a point about how no one on the conservative side would ever dream of exploiting a child in the manner that someone did. It wasn't Obama because it was before Obama made the comment about Malika in the press conference.
I don't know. I don't know. Anything
have to find it.
Yeah, anything that was said by a Republican, though, is garbage. You know? Who else do we have here? Oh, Bruce writes, update on that oil plume. The giant subsurface oil plume heading toward Mobile Bay turns out to be something less. The scientist who charted the 10-mile by 30-mile by 3,000-foot thick plume says he was misquoted. It is not visible oil or even necessarily oil, but detectable hydrocarbons dissolved in the water. Still nasty stuff. But it won't be washing up as a tar slick. My guess is the heavy parts are collected on the ocean floor closer to the wellhead, and this is the byproduct of the dispersants. Okay. And I didn't get a P.S. with that from Prairie 2, but I'll add it. P.S. This stuff is still lethal and toxic and beyond belief. Speaking of Prairie 2, we have a missive from him today. And there's something I want to share with you that is just astonishing. Somebody sent me the link today. It is from EU Times, European Union, EU Times. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's Mike Malloy.
And you talk that talk. You knocks me out. Out off of my feet.
21 past the hour. Sean writes in, the BP video is back up again, but the oil is flowing worse than ever now. You have to see this. It's clear at this point that the top kill failed. And you can see that video on your own link. I'm sure you have your own link at this point. If you don't have one, go to MikeMalloy.com and it's there. Bob Kincaid writes, lest we forget, these re-pig-licking scum have a history. Remember Limbaugh calling little Chelsea Clinton the White House dog? For me, Mike, the sickest, most deviant part of all this is that a stray, dirty, quote-quote word could run you right off the air. But Beck can assault children on air, and it's not a violation of his use of the public, quote-quote, airwaves. Anyone still think those airwaves are so public? Bob. Now, what were you going to say about the Palin family? Oh, by the way, let me just say this. When we come back after the next break, we will open the lines and do some podcast trivia. So if you are interested in winning a one-year subscription to commercial-free Malloy podcast downloads, now's the time to call in. Now that we've released the line, some jackass called in or emailed me and said, "You never get any calls." All right, go ahead. I'm sorry. I can't hear you.
I was going to say, we don't want any calls, dude.
Right.
No, several people emailed me, and I remembered it, actually, believe it or not, on my own. But it was Glenn Beck himself, what I was talking about earlier, about, you know, there was some sort of hypocrisy, some right-wing host or somebody earlier. And it was that Sarah Palin
Sarah was complaining because she had to build a fence all the way around her house, you know, which you can probably see from Russia. So Putin's probably watching it now, you know. But she had to build a fence because some freak journalist moved in next door and was going to, like, spy on her strange little family. So, and Beck was sympathizing. That's horrible. That's just terrible. You know, we're living in an age where no one's safe. No one should prey and be a predator, mock right. children or target children or all children. Children should be off the table. Children, I think he even said, children of politicians. Until they enter politics themselves, they should be off the table. Okay, that was like Tuesday. You know, I guess what he meant was conservative children or children of conservative politicians should not be mocked.
Son of a bitch belongs to
okay
the straight jacket.
Just go on the air
right.
and go off on, and insult this little 11-year-old's intelligence and mock her, and that's okay to rant for half an hour and then give a 20-second apology when you realize, uh-oh, oops, I did it again.
Right, right.
You know, but and no mention, nothing about, hey, you know, it was you just a couple of days ago, all sympathetic to, you know, the Palin clan about, you know, Trig and Track and Brick and Brock and Bark and...
All right, thank you. You get too carried away, Kathy. You really do.
Oh, well, excuse me, but I'm not the one, you know, calling for Glenn Beck so we can open up a little can of whoop-ass on him. Sarah, now, that's another story. I'll take on Sarah. I'll take on Sarah and Michelle Bachmann at the same time.
You will?
Yeah. You know, we'll sell tickets. We'll just have a screech match. We'll just see which one of us can blow out more decibels.
You and Bachmann and Palin?
Yeah, you know, we'll just line up some glasses.
Well,
and see which one of us can shatter them the most efficiently.
Yeah, well, just remember, you know, if you're invited to participate in a knife fight, show up with a gun. Well, I wanted to do Prairie Twos. We'll have to wait because it's longer. And then this article that was in the EU Times. Oh, my God. It is the scariest thing. It goes way beyond what the guy Noel, the software guy, the birther freak, what he said, and we quoted him, read his stuff extensively earlier in the week, or was it last week? I guess it was last week. But this thing I have now is just, you know, Katie bar the door. It is that bad. So, you know, since I made the mistake of reading it, I'm not going to bear all that by myself. I'm going to pass it on to you. So, if you don't want to hear this when we come back, I'll give you a warning. But if you don't want to hear it, just, you know, flip, put the thing on mute until I'm finished. Well, how will you know if it's on mute, right? All right, we're going to take a break here, coming up like right now. So stick around when we come back, podcast trivia, and then on with the show. Anytime. There it is. Thank you.
Misinformation. Taking scissors to play with the black folk down in Florida. Colored pens and for sexing up. And I'm the someone who knew. I'm telling pre-September, I lean on in the loop to help them unremember. I was flying on UA-93, that shadow in the footage, it was probably me. I'm the rumor, I'm the doubt, I'm the lie, but you wouldn't stand near me if you didn't want to die. Sin out of this song.
Yes, time once again for podcast trivia here on the Boy Program, where you can win a one-year subscription to Boy Podcast Downloads, commercial-free. All you have to do is answer the damn question. Just get it right, and it's yours. All right, are we ready? I think we are. Oh, my God, from Toledo, Ohio, Gail, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
A homeboy, huh? You live in Toledo, or you're just passing through? Well, nobody...
No. I actually live in Temperance, just outside of Toledo.
Oh, okay, Temperance, Michigan, right. Nobody lives in Toledo. People just exist there. When I grew up there, it was a great place to live. But all right, you ready to play this game, Gail?
I am.
All right, let's start the music. Here we go. Here we go. We're starting the music right now, Gail. Ah, there's the music! All right, Gail, the House of Representatives yesterday voted to repeal the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy toward gays in the military. What president originally signed that Don't Ask, Don't Tell into law? Was it A, Bill Clinton, B, George Herbert Walker Bush, C, Ronald Reagan, or D, George W. Bush?
A.
A, Bill Clinton. You're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, our vast research department provided me with this. On December 21st, 1993, Clinton issued Defense Directive 1304-.26, which directed that military applicants should not be asked about the sexual orientation. This is a policy now known as Don't Ask, Don't Tell. All right. Way to go, Gail. Thanks a lot, man. Hold on. Hold on. Don't go away. Kathy will get the pertinent information. And you have won. You have won. And the value of your free podcast subscription is $59.60. We got a raft of donations this week that finally got to us. They were sent to our business partner in New York or Connecticut, one of his two offices. And it came here. Eventually, it works its way here. I don't have them at hand right now. A couple want to remain anonymous again, but other people didn't say whether or not they want to remain anonymous. These are donations for the podcast gift subscriptions. They're not donations to the program, which we can't take. And we can't take them. I guess we could, but we don't because we don't want to get involved, get started into please donate us out. If you... And not that there's anything wrong with that. A lot of great sites use donations. I contribute to two that use that rely on donations. But I'm just saying, the only way that you can contribute money to this company, this program, is to buy a podcast subscription or be an advertiser. I guess you could do that. Okay. This is from Christine. Jesus, Mike, just when I think I'm going to lose my pee-pick in mind, I tune in each night to hear someone as pissed off as I am. And thanks, Mike. I used to vacation somewhere on the Gulf or the Atlantic Shore and felt sort of proprietary about it, even though I live in Wisconsin. I voted for Obama, of course, but I'm sorely disappointed at the foot dragon he's doing about this total and possibly permanent disaster. Bring out the planes, the military, the other oil companies and their equipment, volunteers, the Boy Scouts. I don't care what or who you use, but do something and quit relying on anything BP suggests. Oh, and dump the regulatory agency whose members sleep with the big oil guys. And Obama goes to California on a fundraiser? Damn it. I could threaten to withhold campaign funds for the next election, but I lost my entire pension when Wall Street tanked. Did they fix that yet? I forget. Keep telling the truth. You keep me sane. P.S. I'm a grandmother who spent 18 years as a cop. Go figure. Christine. Thanks, Christine. And from Prairie 2, do you want to hold those calls on hold and then I'll get to them? Okay. From Prairie 2, a missive. Vessels of honey and granaries of corn, or fend for thyself. Uh-oh. I think Prairie 2 is going biblical on us tonight. He writes, Wall Street finished its worst month in well over a year with another down day. Yesterday's enthusiasm over China, saying it wasn't dumping its euro bonds, evaporated on the news that Spain was having a debt downgraded again. Doesn't much matter what China does if the Wall Street gangs are allowed to come into the neighborhood and bust out the shop windows looking for protection money. Keep in mind that the more volatile the markets are, the more the Wall Street banks make on trading, since they front load all the trades and make their money first ahead of their clients. Who is stupid enough to buy stocks with the hedge fund managers telling their investors to buy land in the country and lots of canned goods? Well, that would be your 401k manager or your pension plan. They don't have much choice, since the plans are usually dedicated to one type of investment scheme. People don't seem to realize they could take their money out, and now that it's down, are afraid to withdraw because they would be locking in their losses. Not everyone got caught up in the stock market, though. It seems many church-owned pension funds avoided that problem by simply not putting any significant money into funding their pension plans. Everybody from hospital workers to Christian book printers, as well as the church secretary, are finding out that Bernie Madoff wasn't the only Ponzi scheme in town. After decades of doing the Lord's work for substandard pay, they were counting on the Lord providing a modest pension. The Lord doesn't seem to be able to manage money very well, and the pension plans are shutting down. The double whammy is they don't even get pennies on the dollar from the Federal Pension Insurance Fund, since churches made sure that they and their affiliated businesses were exempt from government oversight. Separation of church and state is handy when you don't want to pay taxes or meet your pension obligations. Otherwise, of course, America's a Christian nation when they want to have their superstitious beliefs be taught in school instead of science, or enforcing an assortment of irrational hatreds and bigotries as the law of the land. Of course, it's the end times, so it doesn't matter, right? The last time they were sure it was the end times, they created the Dark Ages that took the better part of a millennium to overcome. The Bible does say to store 2 years' worth of canned goods. That's probably not enough. Where does it say that? Prairie 2. Go to his website. Prairie, as in the loan, numeral2.com. Prairie2.com. All right, as promised, this is from EU Journal. You know, I tried to scope this thing out and make sure it's not something from some right-wing crazy people like RedState.com or Free Republic. It's none of those. Here's what it says. A dire report prepared for Russian President Medvedev by Russia's Ministry of Natural Resources is warning today that the British petroleum, oil, and gas leak in the Gulf of Mexico is about to become the worst environmental catastrophe in all of human history, threatening the entire eastern half of the North American continent with total destruction. Huh. Russian scientists are basing their apocalyptic destruction assessment due to BP's use of millions of gallons of the chemical dispersal agent known as Corexit 9500, which is being pumped directly into the leak of this wellhead over a mile under the Gulf of Mexico waters, and designed, this report says, to keep hidden from the American public the full and tragic extent of this leak that is now estimated to be over 2.9 million gallons a day. The dispersal agent Corexit 9500 is a solvent originally developed by Exxon and now manufactured by the Nalco Holding Company of Naperville, Illinois, that is four times more toxic than oil. It is in a written report by Anita George Aris and James R. Clark for Exxon Biomedical Sciences, Inc., titled Acute Aquatic Toxicity of Three Corexit Products, an Overview. Corexit 9500 was found to be one of the most toxic dispersal agents ever developed. Even worse, according to this report, with higher water temperatures like those now occurring in the Gulf of Mexico, its toxicity grows. The United States Environmental Protection Agency is discovering BP's use of this dangerous dispersal agent and ordered BP to stop using it. But BP refused, stating that their only alternative to Corexit 9500 was an even more dangerous dispersal agent known as Seabrat 4. The main differences between Corexit 9500 and Seabrat 4 lie in how long these dangerous chemicals take to degrade into their constituent organic compounds, which for Corexit 9500 is 28 days. Seabrat 4, on the other hand, degrades into an organic chemical called non-ilphenol that is toxic to aquatic life and can persist in the environment for years. A greater danger involving Corexit 9500, and as outlined by Russian scientists in this report, is that with its 2.61 parts per million toxicity level, and when combined with the heating of the Gulf of Mexico waters, its molecules will be able to, quote, phase transition, end quote, from their present liquid to a gaseous state, allowing them to be absorbed into clouds and allowing their release as toxic rain upon all of eastern North America. Even worse, should a Katrina-like tropical hurricane form in the Gulf of Mexico, while tens of millions of gallons of Corexit 9500 are sitting on or near its surface, the resulting toxic rain falling upon the North American continent could, quote, theoretically destroy all microbial life to any depth it reaches, resulting in a, quote, unimaginable environmental catastrophe, destroying all life forms from the bottom of the evolutionary chart to the top.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Oh, no. All right, it turns out the European Union Times, the EU Times... I'm not even going to finish quoting from the article. I, you know, in a way, I hate the web. I hate the World Wide Web. I really do. There's so much garbage on there, like Glenn Beck. But the EU Times appears to be a libertarian KKK rag, or maybe Russian Nazis, or they just steal from those sources. They're the ones who ran a prominent piece about the North Korea, about North Korea torpedoing the oil rig because it was built by South Korea. They have a front page drop down menu section headed "White Survival." And it's what it sounds like. All right, thanks, Bruce. Jesus, God. I wish we did have a crack research department. See, that would never go on the Rachel Maddow show or Keith Olbermann. They would do the research before they put something like that out there. Oh, well, that happens all the time on the Malloy show. So don't let it flummox you. At least we come right back on and... clear it up. I think we got time for this. This is from Charlie in Atlanta. Mike, it's now time to broaden our focus and tell the world what just happened in Houston at Chevron's shareholder meeting this week. Local representatives of indigenous communities throughout the world that suffer from BP-sized events every day in places like the Niger River Delta, Angola, Burma, Colombia, Kazakhstan, Ecuador, and even Alaska, converged on the Chevron shareholder meeting. Chevron's new CEO, John Watson, employed private security forces that nearly outnumbered shareholders in attendance and used these forces to deny certain full and proxy shareholders access to the meeting. Despite this, representatives of these groups worked together and were able to attend the meeting. During the shareholder response time, activists were able to take over the meeting to the point that the new CEO ordered the removal and arrest of outspoken individuals using brutal and unnecessary force. When these efforts failed, he tried in exasperation to adjourn the meeting, Still, shareholders listened to the advocates and their presentation. Antonia Uhouse was charged with, quote, disrupting a meeting, end quote, and, quote, criminal trespass, end quote, despite being a shareholder and speaking at the shareholder-designated response time. Chevron and all oil companies abuse human rights, oppress, poison, pollute, kill, and destroy with impunity. Chevron, BP, Shell, Exxon, and all the others do not care or respect the law or any other moral or ethical boundary. We can practically use their names interchangeably. Many people probably don't care what happens to indigenous groups or poor people. If BP and Chevron didn't kill them and destroy their ecosystems, someone else would, is a common response. So let me bring this issue closer to home. The existing deep oil exploration moratorium and the latest moratorium do nothing to stop existing operations like the BP Atlantis, which is located in very deep water, 7,000 feet, about 150 miles off the coast of New Orleans. A whistleblower revealed that the Atlantis cut corners and was substantially out of compliance. I have to wonder what Obama and MMS even define as compliance, since BP was allowed to drill despite failing to file 6,000 to 7,000 necessary documents and permits. Oh yeah, I forgot to mention that the Atlantis can produce an event five times the size of the Horizon spill in 5 days. That would translate to a spill 30 times larger than Horizon in 30 days at double the depth. So even if you don't think indigenous people have any bearing on your life, you're wrong. Who do you think will be arrested and barred from the next shareholder meeting? I guess we shouldn't be surprised that Chevron took over the Enron building in Houston and even hired their traders. I don't know about you, but I feel a deep sense of deja vu. Charlie. P.S. I strongly recommend the site spillthetruth.org. Spillthetruth.org. And Democracy Now!'s report on this very subject at the Chevron shareholders meeting. Yeah, you know, Charlie's right, and it's certainly what we've suggested on this program. Every one of these oil companies represent the worst of predatory capitalism, the very worst. Somebody tell me an industry that is more destructive, more life-threatening. You might say the nuclear industry, but I mean, let's compare. All right, let's take the entire energy industry then, because it's all based on, certainly all except the nuclear industry, is based on ripping stuff out of the ground. Well, so is the nuclear industry when you get right into it. Ripping stuff out of the ground, leaving huge gaping holes, leaving disaster, disease, death, destruction in its wake. And for what? For what? So you and I can go to a Target store or a Walmart or a some other great emporium of this decadent, wasteful materialism and buy what? Another CD? Some plastic clothing for our kids? Made in China? Takes a lot of petroleum to make children's clothes these days, you know. We're going to break here. We'll be back. Stay with us. If you can, I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Malloy program. What else we got here before we go to your phone calls? The number here is 877-996-2556. So if you want to check in. All right, I want to share this with you. This is from Nora. Wrote, "Hi, Mike. The BP Gulf oil catastrophe is probably going to be the worst ocean disaster so far for the world as a whole. But the oligarchy has been doing this sort of thing for a long time. They operate on oligarchy ruling elite time. And they know the memory of ecological beauty and balance can die in a single generation in the underclasses. The Native Americans have kept their cultural memories intact to a great extent. Memories so close to the earth. The buffalo herds, the beautiful multiplicity of nations of animals, as well as tribes of humans living in harmony. They are unique, the exception. It's not the same with the colonial populations, the populations that descend from those who willingly decimated the buffalo. I have lived in three areas now that make me understand why the New Orleans-Mississippi Delta can be described as 40% of the United States wetlands. They have, or had, such a huge percentage because we have drained and filled so many wetlands on this continent. I lived in northern Indiana, southeast of Chicago, where the vast wetlands left by the glaciers were drained and filled, much of it now built over with refineries and rusting industry. In California, almost the full extent of wetlands of the San Francisco Bay Area have been lost to shipping docks, housing developments, industry, biotech labs, Chevron refineries, airports. Where I used to live north of San Francisco, I was in a nice city called Santa Rosa, which was built on a huge wetlands. The community was originally built on this drained and filled ecosystem, which was the reason Santa Rosa was completely destroyed when the 1906 earthquake shook it into jiggling mush. But they rebuilt. Today, the last of the beautiful egrets nests in a couple of trees in a median strip in one neighborhood, where some consider the bird's droppings a nuisance. Yes, no one remembers that a bit more than 100 years ago, the entire area was alive with water birds, migratory birds, frog, fish, dragonflies. The masters of industry and development know this formula. It's this. They can do whatever they please to the ecological system and only have to deal with the present generation, and usually just the local neighborhood, who knows what they are missing, what was lost when the profitable destruction took place. It looks to me that Obama has been assigned to speak the words that feel your pain, people of the Gulf Coast. But the masters of industry never will. They are too busy planning their next assault to the Earth's surface, the next development, the next exploratory drilling, the next mountaintop removal. As they secure themselves ever more wealth, power, and control, this usually results in separating the underclasses from a healthy environment, further weakening the underclasses, whose subsequent generations don't even know what a healthy environment was like. But you'll be taken care of by the corporatists. Want to buy another video game? Nora. Yeah, it all kind of comes into focus, doesn't it? I mean, we have been listening for, I don't know, I guess people started tuning into, I'm talking about in recent American history, the last 40 or 50 years, people started tuning into the stories and belief systems of the indigenous people, whether it's here or in the Arctic or in the Southwest or Mexico or, you know, wherever, different parts of the globe, Africa, different countries in Africa. And all of a sudden it became kind of fashionable for white folks or Western European folks or European American folks to pay some attention to that. I say it became fashionable because it was just that, a fashion. Not a whole lot of people tuned into it. As a matter of fact, there are an awful lot of white folks with a lot of power, like, oh, I don't know, pick a name. I got one, Rush Limbaugh, who completely denigrate indigenous people or people who were here first, or there first, or over there first. You know, indigenous people. So it was kind of a fad. There were a number of people across the United States who tuned into indigenous people and what kind of power they had. My introduction to that was Carlos Castaneda and the use of peyote, which I would recommend to anyone over the age of 35. I say over the age of 35 because under 35, I think people are too inexperienced to deal with it, with what happens when you ingest peyote and listen. But other than that brief involvement with so-called, and we lumped it together, didn't we, white people, we lumped it together and called it New Age! New Age stuff! And the problem was that it mixed into the really enlightening information that was available. And I'm not talking about religious dogma. I'm not talking about the great spirit in the sky. I am talking about information, education, knowledge that indigenous people have. It's almost time to put it in the past tense, had. So, you know, a number of white people tuned into that and got enlightened or partially enlightened or thought they did or told their friends they did or whatever. But there was knowledge there to be gained. There still is. You know, when every once in a while on the Discovery Channel, God help me, or the Science Channel, there'll be a special about some white people going into Amazonia and being guided by people of Brazil or people of other countries in that great middle section of South America. And they're guided into the interiors of these countries. Usually it's Brazil, where all of a sudden they discover amazing things where it concerns the natural order, plant life, animal life, natural medicine, all sorts of cures and fixes and understandings and harmonies. Same thing is true with, remember that thing we saw on traditional medicine in India, Kathy? Ayurvedic medicine? So every once in a while, you know, Westerners or white people or Europeans or whatever the hell we are with the pale skin, we'll tune into some of this until it becomes not a fad anymore and then we move on. But the knowledge and the warnings that are out there by indigenous people who have been in tune, they didn't go through the dark ages. They didn't go through the plagues and diseases and destruction that Europeans went through. And consequently, this is just my cheesy reading of history. Consequently, they were open to understanding what it meant to live in harmony with nature. Doesn't that sound cute? Live in harmony with nature. What does it make you think of? Brown rice and smoking a doobie and sit around beating on a tambourine, right? Well, that's not what they meant. Living in harmony with nature. Not what they meant at all. But here we are. Look at the destruction. Look at the destruction. Nigeria, Ecuador, Gulf of Mexico, Kazakhstan. It just goes on and on. We'll be right back and take your phone calls. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Here's the pen, here's the X. Put your name on.
Amen.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
21 past the hour. Andre writes in, I heard some British BP execs on NPR this morning, or a version of NPR, or a British version of NPR, or maybe it was the BBC. Anyway, it was amazing how absolutely calm this empty suit was in response to questions about won't this disaster affect BP's credibility in the world, and how their part of the bargain was cleaning up their oil. It's why BP has absolute control over the situation. They feel that they possess, beyond any national borders or strata in the earth, those caverns of sludge miles below the surface, and no one's going to touch it but them. This made me think of a little brat screaming, mine, mine, to someone who is trying to take away his toy. Andre. Tom is in Bullhead City, Arizona, listening on something. What are you listening on tonight? Internet?
Yeah, Apple iPhone.
Oh, okay. Well, hello.
Yeah, I want to thank you so much for calling out Glenn Beck. And and no offense to atheists, but God bless you for calling them out. And, you know, I will dedicate my time to you and him getting together, because I think that you guys are the epitome of what is going on, you know?
Yeah, how's that?
Well, because you are right.
Mm-hmm.
And he is wrong. I don't know how to say this. I mean, you are just absolutely correct. And this guy calling Barack Obama's kid like a playing her like a toy today.
Yeah, it's just. But this is what cowards always do. This is what Limbaugh did. This is what cowards do. And if Glenn Beck is anything, he's a gutless coward. He's a whiner, and he has a lot of psychotic viewers and listeners who are just as big of whiners and cowards and spoiled little baby brats. So yeah, okay.
I'm really proud of you. I just want to say I'm really proud of you. I mean, to have the platform that you have and to actually call him out, you know. And
well,
you're on a national stage, and I appreciate it so much.
Let's see if there's any response. I can tell you right now there won't be. Scum on his level, you know, to a piece of human waste like Glenn Beck, I'm just something that attached to the bottom of his shoe. But it doesn't make any difference to me. I couldn't care less how he sees me. For a piece of crap like Glenn Beck to use his radio program, and he has a billion times more listeners than I, to use his radio program to go after an 11-year-old child in that mocking, disgusting, psycho voice of his. I mean, somebody needs to take this boy down a notch. And the offer's out there. If he wants to respond, let him respond. But I'll tell you right now, Tom, he's a coward.
I'm going to make it my hobby.
All right.
Tom Hansen, Hansen, Tom Hansen 2002 at yahoo.com. And I'm going to make it my hobby. I'm going to get you two together.
All right.
I'm going to do it.
You do
watch
it.
Watch this.
I'll watch.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, Tom. Take care. Man, yeah, what a cowardly little twit. Does Beck's listeners, these psychos, do they think that's funny? Is it so cute to make those kinds of comments? You know, Obama makes a comment about, yeah, this thing is so devastating. You know, my daughter comes in and says, Daddy, did you plug the hole yet? You know, Molly has also asked me about this. And for this disgusting turd, Glenn Beck, to mock that, to attempt to denigrate this child. I mean, Jesus God, is this what Fox News Channel wants out there? I mean, okay, he can go after Barack Obama with his lies and his distortions and his half-truths. If Barack Obama gets tired enough of Glenn Beck, he'll just send a goddamn drone missile up his rear end. But But to go after a child? You cowardly little twit. Filthy little coward. But that's how right-wing, that's how conservatives operate. They're very brave when it concerns a cluster of cells inside a woman's body that they can't control because they can't reach it. Well, here's what we'll do. But when it's an 11-year-old breathing child, you pig, you filthy pig, Beck, you filthy pig. We'll be right back.
Ready to make nice? It's Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. Joe is in San Diego. Hey, Joe.
How are you, Mike?
How you doing?
All right.
Good.
Part of a worldwide conspiracy. Am I off? Hello?
Yes, yes. Go ahead, Joe.
Part of a worldwide... This whole thing is part of a worldwide conspiracy, you know, by the rich.
Yeah, I believe...
Whatever they do, they don't care, and even if they can't make money on it, I don't know. That's what I think. That's what it seems to me. It seems like sabotage to me. Everything that goes their way goes in their favor. Now, everything goes wrong goes in their favor anyway. They get excused. Poor people have to work and slave all day. And they can't have much to say about what they want, what they really want out of a job. And a lot of things that are wrong. This thing with Obama, somebody's got to stand up to him from the left, somebody who's progressive, because he can't stay like that and expect to win the next election in 2012. It's only going to get a lot worse. There's nobody in the Democratic Party, no progressive standing up against them, to at least talk against them. Damn it, split the party if that's the case. Why let him get away with all that laissez-faire capitalism playing patsy to them? This guy on Sundays is a lie from the land of empty dreams and broken promises. He's supposed to be a lefty. He's a counterfeit lefty. We got a lot of lefties who don't even believe that those voting machines, those electronic voting machines, are crooked. They're all fixed. He's afraid, like the rest of them, that because Karl Rove, Ike, Mike Connell, and his private plane, before he was about to testify, he thinks he's, you know, a lot of lefties think they're going to get iced too by Karl Rove and company, people like that.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you, I agree with you, Joe. I think what Obama needs is the same thing, bless his old pea-picking heart, that LBJ had to get back in 1968, and that was a challenge from the left, because it was apparent that LBJ was not going to listen to the American people and stop the slaughter in Southeast Asia. So Eugene McCarthy showed up. And, of course, his candidacy didn't last too long because, or his plans to, his campaign, I should say, didn't last too long because then Bobby Kennedy jumped into the fray. But Obama needs a chance. I don't know who there is left on the political left who is really on the political left to challenge Obama. There is no left anymore. The left now, the way it's spoken of by pigs like Hannity and Limbaugh and Beck and Crazy Eyes Malk and the rest of these people, that left only exists one place, and that's in their fevered brains. That left doesn't exist any place. There's no liberal media. There are no leftist politicians. Jesus, God. But it's so much a part of right-wing scare lore, you know, the fear-mongering. Instead of great big monsters in their closets, there's great big liberals in their closets. And they want everybody, and thanks, Joe, they want everybody else to be as scared as they are of their own shadows. But there's no left anymore. I don't know. I think it's somebody from the political left who is established the way Eugene McCarthy was a senator to challenge LBJ. And when you take a look at the Democratic Party, who, and you can't come up with these senators from the upper Midwest, because they're not liberals. You know, Al Franken is no more of a liberal than Barack Obama is or Rahm Emanuel is. They're Democrats, but they're not liberals. Barney Frank, he's not a liberal. Come on, Jesus. He's no more of a liberal than Al Franken is. You know, Barney Frank, forget his anything, forget everything about him except for the fact that he's a whore, another whore, no offense to sex workers, another whore for the banking industry, the investment banking industry. I mean, who is there? Somebody tell me. And the crazy people on the right in the conservative faction, the ones that are standing neck deep in a toilet just waiting for it to be flushed, they will tell you that people like Barney Frank is a liberal. Please. But because one thing the right does understand in this country, they're stupid. They're dumber than dirt. They have no historical sense whatsoever. And they know that their acolytes, their followers, their listeners, their viewers are equally as dumb, if not more so, because they're easily manipulated. So, sure, Joe, let's get somebody from the left. But who? Who? Mike is in Chicago, or driving in Chicago. Hello, Mike.
Hello, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm all right.
I was telling Kathy about a program I watched on the History Channel, mm-hmm. and it was the history of the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, yeah, that very, very long one. I saw that.
Yeah. I was watching that, and it just hit me right between the eyes that this Tea Party is the new Ku Klux Klan. Their lies and their politics and everything is right down the line of what the Ku Klux Klan preaches.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. Anyone who watches that documentary, Julian Bond, who happens to be a good friend of mine, or he was until he moved away 20 years ago, but he was one of the chief narrators in that film. And, that film lays out, as you point out, clearly not just the parallels between the teabaggers and the Klan back in the 20s and 30s and 40s, and post-war, but not just the parallels, but the fact that they're exactly the same. The only thing the teabaggers don't do is put on the pointed hoods. Not yet, but they're exactly the same. Yes.
Well, I'm sure if they could find a supplier to build the outfits, they'd have them.
I'll bet they would. And, you know, Glenn Beck is the Grand Dragon. And Sarah Palin is, how do they designate women in the Klan? I seem to forget. The Grand Dragoness, I don't know, but, you know, he's right. Teabaggers are the Klan. And there's no debate here. There is any debate, anybody that would argue with that is either an idiot or thinks you are, or is brain dead or thinks you are, or is a half-wit or thinks you are. There's no argument with that. Every single position of the libertarian right, the teabag right, is exactly the position of the Klan. Back when the Klan was enormous. I think at the peak of their power, they had, 12 or 13 million members. And, of course, it was Indiana, born and bred. How about that? Everybody thinks, well, the Klan came out of Mississippi. No, it didn't. No, it didn't. And I live very close to a mountain, Stone Mountain, here in the foothills of North Georgia Mountain, where the Klan was reanimated. The stake was taken out of its heart, and this beast thing rose up again in when was it, in the 40s, Gathy? Late 40s? It was right out at Stone Mountain. And the irony now is Stone Mountain, there's a village, there's a town there, Stone Mountain Village, whatever. And the entire area is has a huge African-American population. I mean, it's just, it never stops, does it? No, you're right. Klan, teabaggers. Absolutely. Sam is L.A. listening on KTLK. Hey, Sam.
Hey, hi.
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing awesome. Here's the thing, Mike. If you can remember 1952, 1953 in Iran,
right.
And when the government of Iran had a change in the in its cabinet and they elected a prime minister, Mossadegh.
Mm-hmm.
And he nationalized British Petroleum. Back then it was called Anglo-something.
Anglo-Iranian Oil Company.
Exactly. And they tried to blockade the Iran and all kind of, you know, shenanigans. And,
well, they overthrew. And, yeah, we've talked about that a lot on this program. They overthrew BP. They asked for assistance from the just being put together CIA, and a couple of people were sent over, and they overthrew the government of Mohammad Mossadegh and installed the Shah of Iran. And we all know what happened with the Shah of Iran and his secret police and the torture cells and what the Shah did to the people of Iran.
Yeah. My point was this. Would you agree that there are sins committed that you cannot repent? I mean, it goes generations and generations of payback. And unfortunately, I think it's a payback for us down here after 50-some-odd years that that the same BP is in America and has caused this chaos.
Well, it does almost seem karmic, doesn't it, Sam, that we worked with BP to overthrow a freely elected, well, as free as can be back in the 50s in Iran, freely elected government. We overthrew it on behalf of BP, and look what happens in the United States now because of BP. Yeah, you're right, Sam. Very interesting. Before the hour, thanks to the crew. We haven't mentioned him in a long time. Our military affairs correspondent is Sharon Gordy. Bruce Enberg sends in the missives, signed Prairie, too. He's our economic affairs guy. Kay Petrini, whose school is out now but continues to write to us. She's our education affairs correspondent. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf have been and remain this program's ethics advisors, and our engineer and executive producer is Kathy Bay. So thanks to everybody. I appreciate it. Blue now is in Toowoomba. Toowoomba what?
Toowoomba, Queensland.
Oh, you're...
What kind of a question is that?
You're in Australia. All right. Hello, Blue.
Yeah. Listen, I was... before I get into what I wanted to talk about, I wanted to to pass on to you that I was talking to Kath about a movie recommendation I've got.
Uh-huh.
A shameless plug for a great film. You've got to find yourself a babysitter and go see The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Fantastic film if you haven't seen it.
We haven't. Kathy says she's heard about it, and she has written it down. As soon as we you know, if it would come to the one drive-in we have in this area, we could see it at the drive-in. But, yeah, we can get a babysitter, sure.
Yeah, it's worth going into Atlanta to see it. The reason I called, ever since this bloody catastrophe happened in the Gulf, we've been watching a panel discussion with four petroleum engineers, an Iranian, a Venezuelan, a Russian, and who's the other one? Who's the other guy? Iranian, Russian, Venezuelan, Norwegian,
mm-hmm.
and a Dutch hydrological engineer
right.
from the Netherlands. And they're saying, look, what BP is saying and what Obama's saying, it's all rubbish. There is a solution. In fact, there's more than one. But the reason they don't want to do it is that they want to maintain the functionality of the well. They don't want to stop the leak at all. They want to maintain this well
mm-hmm.
so they can come back and exploit the oil that's down there. So the last thing they really want to do is plug the leak. They can do it. And the way, quite simply, the way that you do it is you blow this pipe off, the whole bloody thing, right at the level of the seafloor, and then you take the hull of a decommissioned nuclear submarine, the bow of the thing, and they've got dozens of them all over the United States. You tow this thing down and dump it on top of the thing, and then you seal the leaks with the cement they've been trying to use. And all of these people agreed unanimously that this is one very expedient solution that can be done. The technology exists to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But BP is calling this. And they're saying, no, look, we want to maintain the well.
Right. Well,
so it's got nothing to do with stopping the leak at all.
Believe it or not, there have been a couple of voices in this country who have suggested the same thing, Blue, that this could have been stopped the first week. It could have been stopped certainly by the second week. And that, as you point out, the viability of this well is what is primarily what is the primary concern.
Not only that, all of these people agreed that if this had happened anywhere else in the world, the government of whatever country it was would have stepped in immediately.
Oh, sure.
And nationalized the whole thing and said, "Look, either you cooperate or you go to jail."
Right. Right. Well, but most countries do not have, unless it's imported from the U.S. or from certain European countries, most countries do not have, as part of their homegrown system, the kind of predatory capitalism that exists here. They may have predatory capitalists that come to their country and start exploiting natural resources and labor and so on and so forth, but the government still, in these countries, Australia is a good example, still maintains the final say about this stuff.
Exactly.
And
the Norwegian guy, for example, said, you know, look, if this had been, first of all, it wouldn't have happened in Norway because they've got all the safety precautions
right.
and the blowout preventers and the automatic switches and all the rest of it. And he said, if this had happened in Norway, it wouldn't have mattered what oil company it was. They would have nationalized it immediately and gone in with the resources and said, look, we're drafting you people to help us find the real solution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about maintaining the well, it's about stopping the bloody leak.
Right, right.
Well,
I think most Americans who supported Barack Obama have come to the conclusion that once again, what we have in this country is a figurehead for corporate America. This keeps happening over and over again. And I was mentioning earlier tonight, I don't know who there is to challenge him from the left, from the progressive left. I think we've run out of those people, Blue.
Well, you know, I heard you mention a name a while back. Believe it or not, I'm familiar with the man because I've followed his career. But you mentioned the name of a guy named Julian Bond.
Right.
Who was a great friend of Dr. King,
right.
I believe.
Right.
I can remember from my student days a long time ago following civil rights activities in the United States that Julian Bond was someone that you know, had the courage and the integrity and the rest of it, and I suppose he was probably just just too good to be true as far as your system is concerned.
Well, he was elected to the Georgia state legislature here as a senator back in 1968, and the white people in the Georgia Senate refused to seat him. He had to go to the Supreme Court because of his anti-war stance. And I've known Julie and Blue. I've got to leave there. We're almost out of time. I appreciate you checking in. We have about 10 seconds. I've known Julian, oh my God, since 1975. And believe it or not, his brother, who used to be a city council person here in Atlanta, is named James Bond. James Bond. Thanks, Blue. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Just like my mama said, I'm going straight to hell. This memorial.